Welcome to the Fertility Podcast.
How you doing? Welcome to episode 8 of the Fertility Podcast. If this is the first time you've had a listen to the podcast, welcome. As we get nearer Christmas, so it's December 2014, depending on when you're listening to this podcast. And one thing about heading towards Christmas, the party season, if you're trying to conceive, which probably means you might not be drinking, this can be a pretty stressful time. And hopefully there's things that you can listen to in this podcast and previous episodes, tips and advice from experts and people sharing their own stories, which will make you feel less alone on your journey, because it's hard if you are having to say no to that booze and people are asking you why you're not drinking. All the questions that you've been avoiding so far become even more in your face. So I really hope that if this is your first time listening to the podcast, you'll have a listen to some of the earlier episodes. If you've been listening, thank you so much. If you've not yet subscribed, you can do so via iTunes or Stitcher. Also, you can subscribe to the newsletter at thefertilitypodcast.com. Now, I've got two brilliant ladies talking about the work they do with regards to natural fertility methods, Kate Davis and Lisa Affield. So I hope that you find both these ladies very interesting.
Interviews with fertility experts on the Fertility Podcast.
So we're now on episode 8 of the Fertility Podcast, and I'm delighted to be chatting to Kate Davis, who's a fertility coach, fertility practitioner and a qualified nurse. Her website is yourfertilityjourney.com. All will be detailed in the Fertility Podcast notes. Kate, welcome to the podcast. Thank you for being here.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
This is actually my first Skype with video, because normally I haven't, so we're waving at each other, which is quite nice. Quite nice to actually see each other's faces. Now, there's lots that I want to talk to you about. We're going to start off with the support aspect. I want you to talk about what it is as a coach that you offer with the Fertility Podcast, especially in episode 2. We had Susan Seenan, who's the chief exec of Infertility Network UK. We also, in episode 6, spoke with Kate Bryan and Jessica Hepburn, who both have had their own fertility treatments and both also work with Infertility Network UK with regards to the support. Talk to me about what you do as a fertility coach.
Fertility coaching is a relatively new approach that's definitely becoming more and more popular as women experience the benefit of reducing stress and increasing positivity, and how that has an effect on their ability to conceive. I think we all know, don't we, that research clearly demonstrates the link between stress and infertility. So what fertility coaching does is it really helps a woman to achieve a more positive mindset and bring back that sense of purpose and hope into her life that has probably disappeared. So I think many women do feel that they lose that sense of self when they're trying to conceive, and that absolutely life becomes all about getting pregnant. But fertility coaching gives you the opportunity to put yourself very back into the driving seat and empowers a woman to really take control of what's happening to her. So I work with women who are going through a difficult fertility journey, whether it be during, by this point, at IVF, donor, surrogacy, could even be adoption, or even at the very end of an unsuccessful journey when a woman and a couple are trying to find some resolution and contentment in other aspects of their life.
So it's once somebody's established that things aren't running quite to plan, that they'd seek out
absolutely
the support from working, and they'll work directly with you.
Yes, absolutely, yes.
And what kind of regularity would you see somebody?
It very much depends on the individual woman. If they're going through IVF, for example, then we'll try and work it around their treatment cycle. So many women find that the 2-week wait is absolutely the worst time, and that's when they need quite an intensive help. So it could be that I see them right at the very beginning when they're about to embark on IVF and they want to get in a really good mindset. Then it might be that during some treatment when they're feeling particularly low, if they're down regulating, for example, and then it can be during the 2-week wait. And then obviously then afterwards you might have hopefully the positive pregnancy test, but it might be a negative pregnancy test, and it's then kind of regrouping and building up for them the next decision that they make, whether they go for another IVF cycle or whatever treatment that they have. So it really is quite individual. It just depends on what they're going through and what they need from me. And I offer various different coaching programs so they can pick and choose what would work best for them.
One of the things that I discussed with Kate Bryan when we were talking about the support groups available, because when I myself was going through IVF, a girlfriend of mine who had been through it had said to me to avoid the support groups because you might go and experience people that have had negative experiences, and you want to be as positive as you can. And Kate was quite adamant that they can be really uplifting and supportive. And that's one thing that we really want to get across on the Fertility Podcast, is the importance of support. If you're working with someone who has had failed cycles, and maybe there's that reluctance to continue, or even someone who maybe is about to embark on the treatment and has had, like I had, the suggestion that you don't want to be talked down by anybody, how do you overcome that misconception other people might have?
I think it's very individual, really, and how a woman feels to what level of support she wants. Some women, just the whole idea of going to a village hall, a drafty village hall, and sitting in a support group fills them with horror. Some women will find it incredibly uplifting, as you said, to have the support of the women that are going through a similar situation. I, interestingly, have what's become really popular, a Facebook group, which is a Facebook fertility support group. It's a closed Facebook group. And I have women from all over the world who have joined the fertility support group, and they love it, and the fact that it's almost that little bit more anonymous, but they can post queries in a really, really safe environment and get support from other members of the group. And also what they found really rewarding, as well as getting support, is also giving support, and how rewarding they've actually felt that.
Yeah.
So I think it very much depends as to what the woman feels that she wants. Everybody is individual, and it's really up to her. So from my point of view, I would be supporting her and guiding her to choose the right situation and circumstance for her.
We're going to talk a bit more about your methods. I do want to ask you a little bit about the men, because it's one of the areas that we're trying to bring to the forefront with the Fertility Podcast. Men and who they talk to and the support that's there for them. I mean, do you get many male patients?
Unfortunately, no. Generally, as far as the fertility coaching is concerned, I coach women. The natural fertility, which is the other side of my practice, I can see both women and men for that, because obviously, you know, the man is half of the equation. So if I'm talking about natural fertility aspects, then it's really important that we talk about both. Now, it might be that the men decide to accompany the lady, and we go through both aspects with them both. Sometimes they don't want to, and therefore I'm talking to a woman, but we also concentrate quite a lot on the man as well. So we'll be talking about his lifestyle factors, etc., depending on what aspect we're talking about. But I think you've raised an incredibly important point. I think there's a huge lack of support for men out there in general, and I think that's also hampered by what is the difficulty in encouraging men to engage in such a sensitive issue. And that it's associated, unfortunately, with so much stigma.
Yeah.
It's how we move forward on that is an issue.
Well, I think it's going to take many more podcasts and discussions to get to the bottom of that. I mean, if we can put more ideas in people's heads by having these kind of conversations, then it's a starting point. Talking about the natural fertility side of what you do, let's find out more about that, because I think a lot of it can be overlooked, and I'm keen to know how you feel with regards to unexplained infertility, which can affect 25% of couples trying. And when that is the diagnosis given, the next form of treatment seems to be fertility treatment, which of course is a solution, and it's an incredible thing that we have available to us. But the more I talk to people, the feeling that there's too much of a rush for that to be the quick fix, rather than people actually looking at their well-being. What you do with the natural fertility also seems to be overlooked. So just talk to me more about that side of things.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, it is. And that's actually why I set up in my private practice, because I became so frustrated at the lack of information given to women. So they'd go along maybe to their GP, perhaps they'd only been trying for, you know, less than a year perhaps, but they're concerned, they're worried. So they go along to their GP, and unfortunately I think GPs are guilty at not giving women the right information at the right time. So they're told very much to go away and keep trying. So they go away and keep trying, and of course nothing happens because they don't have the information. And I think the information on your natural fertility indicators and your lifestyle, if a woman's given that early on, then that's very likely going to avoid kind of expensive, invasive, traumatic, stressful infertility investigations in the future. So for a large percentage of women, that will really help. And research clearly shows that time to conception with fertility awareness knowledge is reduced. So
just give me an idea. I mean, are we talking about knowing your cycle, knowing when you ovulate, that kind of awareness?
Yeah. Well, what I do is I work with women and couples who, like I said, are perhaps in the first year, to 2 years of trying to conceive, and really would like that knowledge and understanding of what they can actively do to maximise their chance of conceiving. So yes, I teach them how to monitor and record their natural fertility indicators. So those are your basal body temperature, your cervical secretions, and your position of your cervix. Now, a lot of women already do that. They might be using an app, or they might have read how to do it on Mumsnet, but actually often they're not doing it correctly. So it's really having that detailed information to know how to observe and assess it correctly. I'm then able to assess their charts and identify any abnormalities, which then the lady can take that information back to her GP. She's armed with that information. She can take to her GP and specialist and go, look, you know, I'm ovulating irregularly, or my luteal phase is really, really short, or various other aspects, which is really powerful knowledge to have, and to hopefully then can move things forward for them if they did require any investigations at that point. But as well as looking at their natural fertility indicators, I also look in quite a lot of detail at their general health, and in particular their lifestyle. So sometimes just small little tweaks in their lifestyle can make all the difference into optimising their ability to conceive. So we would look at things like nutrition, diet, toxins, alcohol, smoking, exercise, weight, you know, all the lifestyle factors. Like I said, just little tweaks can make a huge difference.
What do you say to people who will see, without being rude, your average Joe on the street who looks overweight and they're smoking a fag and they've got the kid in the pushchair, you know, and they lead a healthy lifestyle and they eat well and maybe they have the odd glass of wine, but, you know, they've stopped smoking? Because there must be an issue with trying to convince people when they feel that they're living a healthy lifestyle. How do you work with that?
Oh, that's quite interesting, because if I had a penny for how many times women have said that to me, I'd be a wealthy lady.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. It's devastating, really. You know, how do you answer that? You know, it is so unfair, and there just seems to be no reason or rhyme for it.
Okay, that's the only way to answer it, isn't it? That there isn't, it doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't make sense. But we do know that there's things that you can do to really check your lifestyle and make those little tweaks that will make a big difference. So if a woman's struggling to conceive, anything that she can do is going to have a positive impact. And if she tries to conceive naturally and it doesn't work out, at least she's got herself in a really good starting point then for IVF or any other fertility investigations.
And it makes sense to try and make yourself as fit and healthy and clean as you can with regards to toxins. And, you know, it's a small sacrifice when you think of the bigger picture.
Yes.
Personally, is what I think. And I know that you have this 30-day program, because it does need to be something, probably a minimum, isn't it, that you do need to stick to?
Absolutely, yes. It's 30-day program, which is an online program to educate women on how they can maximise their fertility potential. And it covers all the things that I've talked about, so the natural fertility indicators, lifestyle aspects. But it also goes on to look at the impact of stress in more detail. And I teach them some great fertility coaching techniques that they can use to cope with the difficult days. So if they walk down the street and they do see that lady who's overweight with a cigarette and a baby in the pushchair, and they go home and cry themselves to sleep, at least it gives them some ways of coping with those difficult days and, importantly, increasing that positivity.
We're going to talk a bit more about your methods. I do want to ask you a little bit about the men, because it's one of the areas that we're trying to bring to the forefront with the Fertility Podcast. Men and who they talk to and the support that's there for them. I mean, do you get many male patients?
Unfortunately, no. Generally, as far as the fertility coaching is concerned, I coach women. The natural fertility, which is the other side of my practice, I can see both women and men for that, because obviously, you know, the man is half of the equation. So if I'm talking about natural fertility aspects, then it's really important that we talk about both. Now, it might be that the men decide to accompany the lady and we go through both aspects with them both. Sometimes they don't want to, and therefore I'm talking to a woman, but we also concentrate quite a lot on the man as well. So we'll be talking about his lifestyle factors, etc., depending on what aspect we're talking about. But I think you've raised an incredibly important point. I think there's a huge lack of support for men out there in general, and I think that's also hampered by what is the difficulty in encouraging men to engage in such a sensitive issue. And that it's associated, unfortunately, with so much stigma.
Yeah.
It's how we move forward on that is an issue.
Well, I think it's going to take many more podcasts and discussions to get to the bottom of that. I mean, if we can put more ideas in people's heads by having these kind of conversations, then it's a starting point. You're talking about the natural fertility side of what you do. Let's find out more about that, because I think a lot of it can be overlooked, and I'm keen to know how you feel with regards to unexplained infertility, which can affect 25% of couples trying, and when that is the diagnosis given, the next form of treatment seems to be fertility treatment, which of course is a solution and it's an incredible thing that we have available to us. But the more I talk to people, the feeling that there's too much of a rush for that to be the quick fix, rather than people actually looking at their well-being. What you do with the natural fertility also seems to be overlooked. So just talk to me more about that side of things.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, it is. And that's actually why I set up in my private practice, because I became so frustrated at the lack of information given to women. So they'd go along maybe to their GP, perhaps they'd only been trying for, you know, less than a year perhaps, but they're concerned, they're worried. So they go along to their GP, and unfortunately I think GPs are guilty at not giving women the right information at the right time. So they're told very much to go away and keep trying. So they go away and keep trying, and of course nothing happens because they don't have the information. And I think the information on your natural fertility indicators and your lifestyle, if a woman's given that early on, then that's very likely going to avoid kind of expensive, invasive, traumatic, stressful infertility investigations in the future. So for a large percentage of women, that will really help. And research clearly shows that time to conception with fertility awareness knowledge is reduced. So
just give me an idea. I mean, are we talking about knowing your cycle, knowing when you ovulate, that kind of awareness?
Yeah. Well, what I do is I work with women and couples who, like I said, are perhaps in the first year to 2 years of trying to conceive, and really would like that knowledge and understanding of what they can actively do to maximise their chance of conceiving. So yes, I teach them how to monitor and record their natural fertility indicators. So those are your basal body temperature, your cervical secretions, and your position of your cervix. Now, a lot of women already do that. They might be using an app, or they might have read how to do it on Mumsnet, but actually often they're not doing it correctly. So it's really having that detailed information to know how to observe and assess it correctly. I'm then able to assess their charts and identify any abnormalities, which then the lady can take that information back to her GP. She's armed with that information. She can take to her GP and specialist and go, look, you know, I'm ovulating irregularly, or my luteal phase is really, really short, or various other aspects, which is really powerful knowledge to have, and to hopefully then can move things forward for them if they did require any investigations at that point. But as well as looking at their natural fertility indicators, I also look in quite a lot of detail at their general health, and in particular their lifestyle. So sometimes just small little tweaks in their lifestyle can make all the difference into optimizing their ability to conceive. So we would look at things like nutrition, diet, toxins, alcohol, smoking, exercise, weight, you know, all the lifestyle factors. Like I said, just little tweaks can make a huge difference.
What do you say to people who will see, without being rude, your average Joe on the street who looks overweight and they're smoking a fag and they've got the kid in the pushchair, you know, and they lead a healthy lifestyle and they eat well and maybe they have the odd glass of wine, but, you know, they've stopped smoking? Because there must be an issue with trying to convince people when they feel that they're living a healthy lifestyle. How do you work with that?
Oh, that's quite interesting, because if I had a penny for how many times women have said that to me, I'd be a wealthy lady.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, it's devastating, really. You know, how do you answer that? You know, it is so unfair, and there just seems to be no reason or rhyme for it.
That's the only way to answer it, isn't it? That there isn't, it doesn't make sense.
No, it doesn't make sense. But we do know that there's things that you can do to really check your lifestyle and make those little tweaks that will make a big difference. So if a woman's struggling to conceive, anything that she can do is going to have a positive impact. And if she tries to conceive naturally and it doesn't work out, at least she's got herself in a really good starting point then for IVF or any other fertility investigations.
And it makes sense to try and make yourself as fit and healthy and clean as you can with regards to toxins. And, you know, it's a small sacrifice when you think of the bigger picture.
Yes.
Personally, is what I think. And I know that you have this 30-day program, because it does need to be something, probably a minimum, isn't it, that you do need to stick to?
Absolutely, yes. It's 30-day program, which is an online program to educate women on how they can maximise their fertility potential. And it covers all the things that I've talked about, so the natural fertility indicators, lifestyle aspects. But it also goes on to look at the impact of stress in more detail. And I teach them some great fertility coaching techniques that they can use to cope with the difficult days. So if they walk down the street and they do see that lady who's overweight with a cigarette and the baby in the pushchair, and they go home and cry themselves to sleep, at least it gives them some ways of coping with those difficult days and, importantly, increasing that positivity.
So I will put all Kate's details on the show notes, which will be thefertilitypodcast.com/episode8. And now let's hear from Lisa about the work she's doing with fertility yoga. So it's now time to welcome my second guest, Lisa Affield, who is the director of Fertility Yoga Limited UK, a company dedicated to promoting yoga for fertility. Now, Lisa's got a really interesting story of her fertility journey, as well as why she's now practicing yoga and teaching yoga. So Lisa, welcome to the Fertility Podcast. How are you?
Hi, I'm fine, thank you.
Good. Now, I was actually recommended speaking to you from Kate Davis, who we spoke to earlier on this podcast, and she focuses a lot on the coaching from the natural fertility side of things. And what I'm keen to talk to you about, because your journey before you started IVF was very much natural, wasn't it?
Yes, definitely. I think I tried everything to change my lifestyle and tried lots of different complementary therapies to get my body in shape, preparing for fertility.
And how old were you when you and your husband started to try for a baby?
I was 26 when I got married, so I started from then. Yep, I was working and living in London, and it was a bit of a postcode lottery, so I was going to different hospitals and they kept saying, come back in 6 months, come back in a year's time, just keep changing your lifestyle, improving your diet, and everything should be okay.
How long did you try for before you went and spoke to your doctor? Did you do the year or did you give it 6 months?
I did a year,
yeah.
And then it took about 6 months to get an appointment. Time you go through the doctor and get the hospital appointment. And then first hospital said, oh, you're very young, you should be fine, you haven't been trying that long, come back in a year's time. And then I came back in a year's time, still nothing happened, and then same again. And then I moved, changed hospitals, started the process again, come back 6 months, come back in a year. And then after about 6 years, they finally checked my husband, because that's the easy option for the NHS, and his sperm count was quite low, so they said he needs to change his lifestyle and come back in a year again.
So after 6 years of backwards and forwarding, your husband's sperm was tested. Was that something that you had heard about as something that could be done?
Or? This was back in the mid-1990s.
So the process which people on the NHS with regards to their fertility might now experience is test for the woman, then test for the man. You guys weren't at all treated that quickly?
No, we were the other way around, I think. And then when they finally investigated me, I had blocked tubes, so it was both of us had infertility.
Okay, so your husband found out he had poor sperm health and you were told that you had blocked fallopian tubes.
Yes.
So you had a diagnosis at least, because in episode 6 of the Fertility Podcast, we talk with Jessica Hepburn and Kate Bryan about how they both received the unexplained infertility diagnosis, which affects so many couples, and it must be so hard to deal with.
Yes, I think it's actually better if you do get a diagnosis, then you can sort of work with what options, really.
Now, just talk to me about the 6-year period of going backwards and forwards to the NHS and to your doctor, because you talk about having a busy, stressful lifestyle. And one of the things that we talked about with Zita West in episode 4 was this importance of well-being and the attention that we do give to our own well-being. And as simple as not looking after yourself, not even having enough sex. If you look back on that period of time, do you think that you were giving it enough attention, you and your husband's well-being?
I think you go through phases. It's quite hard to completely dedicate all your life to it. So we had, like, say 6 months go of trying Chinese herbs, acupuncture, and then maybe another 6 months of having massages or changing our diet. It's really hard to keep going, especially when you're not getting any results. So you sort of throw yourself into something for a period of time and then realise, well, actually, I'm not quite happy here, and then try something else, or you've heard something else and someone recommended you to try something. So it was quite a difficult period and different times for different complementary therapies, but I think they all overall help. I definitely would say, you know, obviously the basic ones of changing your diet, reducing your stress, and how much money you've got to spend on complementary therapies. That was quite a big thing as well.
Let's go on to your yoga practice, because that's where you are now. What point in trying to conceive were you practicing yoga, or have you always done it?
I've always practiced yoga since my late teens, because I had a stressful job in London. I used to just go to a weekly yoga class to manage my stress and keep into shape. And then when I hit 30, after 4 years of trying for a baby, I wasn't getting anywhere. And I thought about teacher training to be a yoga teacher, and then perhaps changing my lifestyle, giving up my stressful job and being a yoga teacher. So at that point, when I was doing my teacher training, it was 600 hours over a 3-year period, I was investigating and researching about fertility yoga, because there wasn't people there at the time. So quite early on in the process.
Because one of the things that I've read with regards to yoga is obviously there's benefits to your health, and there's talk about it helping your cardiovascular health and your immune system. But practicing yoga won't, for example, unblock your tubes, will it? Let's be really clear with that side of things. It's more your overall well-being. But I know that there are different poses that we'll talk about that you've been working on specifically for people trying to get pregnant, which is where you're now focusing what you're doing, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, yoga generally is to help with managing your stress. It's been scientifically proven it manages with your stress. In terms of your reproductive health, there's certain yoga postures that will increase the energy flow to that part of the body, improving your circulation and therefore helping with your well-being and reducing your stress. And if you're trying naturally and you have unexplained infertility, or hopefully will try and conceive naturally, then yoga is a good part for you. And then the second part is if you're having to have fertility treatment, because in my own experience, obviously having blocked fallopian tubes, my only option was IVF. Having IVF in itself is a huge decision to undertake, and a big roller coaster of emotions with all the drugs that you have to have. So yeah. I used my yoga program to help me manage through the IVF cycles.
Okay, before we talk about that, I just want to talk about the before getting pregnant, the fertility-focused yoga. And I know it's really hard to put a time scale on something because everybody's so different, but knowing what you know and the period of time that you were trying before you then sought out more help, if people are wanting to try naturally, say they have been trying and they haven't obviously fallen pregnant, maybe they've started the conversations with the NHS. What period of time would you say that they would need to give something like fertility yoga? Obviously, still talking to their doctor and going through the tests. I mean, would you say, for example, a minimum of 3 months?
To be honest, it's quite personal. Depends if they've got a high stressful job, then yes, I think if they're really stressed and they're unfit, then probably with 3 months. I think you can join the program at any time, whether you want to do a physical practice or just do the relaxations and breathing. But ideally, if you're getting yourself prepared for pregnancy, you probably would give at least a minimum of 2 to 3 months just to get the body into shape.
With regards to using the techniques that you teach people with their breathing when they're having the treatment, I, for example, when I was having my egg collection, and I don't know if it was the same with you, really had been practicing some meditation and focused on that massively whilst the whole procedure was happening. And afterwards, the nurses who'd been offering me gas and air were saying to me how well I'd done at lowering my heart rate. And I was telling them how I'd been practicing this meditation for this procedure. And personally, I think it was a massive, massive part of what I went through. I think I also, you know, practiced yoga and was really keen to have that awareness through the egg collection and the transfer as well. Is that kind of what you focus on? Is that importance? It is kind of mind over matter during it, because like you say, it's so full on and you're so far removed of this thing that's so intimately going on inside you.
I think it's massively important. I think that's one thing you take out of the yoga. It's the breathing and relaxation while you're in the theatre or in the clinic, because you've got to embrace each stage of that process, and it's a long process, as you know. And the nurses were amazed how well I stayed calm and positive through those processes, having been through 5 cycles of IVF. I had a big ups and down journey, and you just got to relax, lie still, and just breathe and let them do their medical procedures.
So 5 cycles, your first child was born after, was it the third?
The third, yep, from a frozen cycle.
And then you had twins.
And then I had another cycle, which was a frozen one and didn't work. And then I said, 38, right, this is my last go, because at some point you have to accept. And I was very lucky to get Josephine, and I've accepted I'll have one more go because of my age. And I was very lucky that I got twins at the age of 39.
Amazing, amazing. And each time that you were going through the drugs, were you then freezing new embryos, or were these from from the first cycle, for example?
I had the first cycle, I didn't have any extra eggs to freeze, and that cycle failed. So the second time I had an egg harvest and I got some frozen ones, which I had Josephine on the third cycle, which was just a frozen cycle, and I had a mixture of egg harvests and frozen cycles.
So for people who, and I know that you're not a doctor, so don't worry about answering this accurately, it's just from your personal experience, from someone who went through IVF to have your first child, was there any, from your point of view, point of trying naturally to conceive again, or did you just, you and your husband decide, right, when we're ready, we'll go back and we'll have the IVF again?
Because I had, my tubes were blocked, I had to have it again.
Right.
And we used ICSI with all the stages as well of IVF.
One other area that I'm keen to ask is whether there's many men that come to your classes, because obviously you've talked about your husband having poor sperm health, which is a fact that we've covered in the previous episode, episode 7 of the Fertility Podcast. And I'm really keen to talk about as much as I can is that male infertility is a big factor in like 25% of fertility cases in the UK. Do you get many men coming? Do you know whether there's been any research as to whether yoga can help sperm health?
I'm not actually teaching any classes at the moment. I'm hoping to be starting to teach some classes in London, but generally in a normal yoga class, you might get one male out of 20 females. So it's quite hard to get men into a class. But the yoga postures I researched using old texts and old yoga books were both for female and male health, reproductive health. Men have a different way of managing their stress. They seem to hide it. So I think a lot goes on internally. I think to get them to go to a yoga class to relax and breathe is really beneficial for men, definitely.
And you've got a DVD, haven't you? And it could be a really lovely thing that couples could do together.
I went to the fertility show a couple of weeks ago with my fertility DVD, and I spoke to quite a few couples about using the DVD together. Some of the men seem to be really interested to help supporting their female partners working with the DVD to help manage stress. And some of the men thought it was interesting and good, but wasn't prepared to commit. But I think, secretly, I think once they get home, they probably have a go, even if it's just relaxation.
Now, how did you find the show? Because we've, again, covered it a lot on the Fertility Podcast. Was it your first visit?
It was my first visit, and personally, it was quite overwhelming.
What was overwhelming about it? How much information was there?
I was like a small fish in a big pond, really. But I think it's really important to get the message about complementary therapies helping and support.
From someone who now we're 6 or 8 years down the line on your fertility journey, I mean, can you imagine if 6 or 8 years ago there was a fertility show available for you?
Yes, it's quite interesting. The reason why I developed my own fertility yoga program was because at the time resources were quite limited and it was quite a taboo subject and I was quite alone, and it was the only thing that sort of kept me going. It was just working with my own yoga program. But now if I was looking for fertility treatment, it's quite overwhelming. There is so much information out there and some of it can be quite contradicting as well. So I think it's really personal what your circumstances are.
One of the points that I've been trying to raise with the Fertility Podcast is this is your body and your life and your situation, and people who aren't in it don't understand. Those who do, who are in it, they know full well that you'll have plenty of questions to ask. Would that be a similar piece of advice from you, just to keep quizzing, keep asking when it comes to the professionals that you're coming in encounter with?
Oh, yes, definitely. People I were talking to at the fertility show a few weeks ago were saying that they've been before and the circumstances have changed, so there's new information, new research, and they're going to try something different. And it's really interesting to keep talking and be open and share your experiences.
I know you've mentioned you've got some workshops that you're hoping to have coming up. And also, I know that it's very early days, but you've been talking with Kate Davis, who was on the podcast earlier with her fertility coaching. So are you finding that there's kind of interesting collaborations on the horizon for you?
I think that there is. I think it'd be really good to collaborate with people like Kate Davis, offering a service for complementary therapies so that people know what's out there. People I spoke to at the fertility show were saying, I really want to do something for myself. I know I've got a medical condition and I need to have support from a fertility clinic. But, you know, what can I do? What can I take ownership of and help me on my journey? I think working with counsellors, acupuncturists, massage and yoga will be really good to collaborate.
All right, Lisa, we can follow you on Twitter at, is it Fertility Yoga UK?
It is, yes.
And your website, just tell me that.
Fertilityyoga.co.uk.
Great. Okay, well, what we're going to do is we'll put all those links in the show notes for the podcast. And let's keep in touch and see what happens with the developments with Kate and with your different yoga workshop. Thank you, and look forward to chatting again soon.
Yeah, brilliant. Okay, take
care. All right.
Bye.
a place for women and men to share and hear stories about the fertility journey.
There's lots to think about, and as both ladies were saying, try not to stress, try to stay positive. I really hope there's been some interesting things for you to pick up on. Now, Kate Davis has very kindly offered anybody listening to the Fertility Podcast 20% off her fertility coaching package if you quote the Fertility Podcast. I'll put these details in the show notes as well. If you're thinking about some yoga, then Lisa's details will be in the show notes. And in the next episode of the Fertility Podcast, we're going to be hearing from Emma Cannon, who is a fertility expert, about the emphasis she puts on health and nutrition, and also the work that she does within her clinics with regards to acupuncture, and just her views and her take on those entering the whole fertility journey. So until the next time.
The Fertility Podcast.